Pushkin.
Every week at Broken Record, we meet with legends of the industry to uncover the meaning behind the music, the strategy and history that separate the good from the truly great. That's what Mark Chaikin does, but for the U.S. stock market. Mark is a creative legend in his own right. He worked on Wall Street for 50 years, invented three new indices for the NASDAQ, and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent mania in AI stocks. Now Mark says we're seeing a similar shakeup in the financial markets. He's calling this a new dawn for the U.S. stock market and predicts dozens of specific stocks will soar in the next 90 days. You can watch Mark's presentation for free at marketmessage2024.com right now. Again, the link to watch is marketmessage2024.com. That's marketmessage2024.com.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Singer-songwriter Arlo Parks is a compelling new voice in music. Born in London, the 22-year-old snagged the Best New Artist trophy at the Brit Awards in 2021, in part because of her breakout single, Eugene, about an unrequited crush. Arlo's songwriting is a vivid exploration of the euphoria and heartbreak that comes with being young and in love. She pulls inspiration from a diverse palette of music, including Ethiopian folk, Radiohead, and Diggable Planets. She's found a way to expertly weave all of those influences into her work. This month, Arlo Parks will release her sophomore record called My Soft Machine. She collaborated with producers who worked with Brockhampton, SZA, and Frank Ocean, and even produced some of it herself. The album unpacks the anxiety of feeling lost in your 20s and navigating the uncertainty of life with grace. On this week's episode, I talk with Arlo about how seeing Black creators pushing the boundaries of popular music inspires her. She also explains how taking long drives around LA shaped the sound of her new album and how she first started writing songs at just 7 years old. Plus, we'll hear Arlo play three of her songs live from the Village Studios in Los Angeles. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Before we jump into my conversation with Arlo Parks, let's hear a live acoustic performance of her new song, Impurities.
Chest is buzzing like a bluebird cage. Laugh like Julia Binoche. She touched my leg to make sure I'm still there. I radiate like a star, like a star. I radiate like a star, like a star. I radiate like a star, like a star. When you embrace all my impurities, when you embrace all my impurities, when you embrace all my impurities, and I feel you clean. All the look you threw me then was so intense that it was physical. You're the rainbow in my soap, you notice beauty in more forms than most. Star, I radiate like a star, like a star. I radiate like a star, like a star. When you embrace all my impurities, when you embrace all my impurities, when you embrace all my impurities, and I feel clean. Don't hide the bruise when you know I'm watching, baby. Don't hide the bruise when you know I'm watching, baby. Don't hide the bruise. I know it's hard to be alive sometimes.
Impurities, I've like listened to it. Like, it's a song that I find like I repeat like three or four times when I listen, because it's such like a feeling of just like elation and freedom. And that emotion really is so in that song that I just usually play it a few times over, because I'm like, I love that feeling. Like, I don't need to, if I could bottle that, you know?
Yeah. And that's exactly how it feels to me. Like, I wanted to capture that feeling of like, either you're coming back from a night out, you're coming back from the beach with people that you feel completely safe with, and the sun is setting and everyone's just kind of quite serene.
Yeah.
And like a few people are dozing off and like everyone is just content. And that's exactly what I wanted.
Those moments, man, if you could just like freeze them where it's like everything is like perfect.
Yeah.
You know? And they're always like moments of quiet or something after like a big thing or a little, whatever. It's just like, you were just like, whoa, like, life couldn't get better than this moment.
It's peace.
Right,
it's
here.
Peace. And I think the biggest thing that is like hard about being human is that those moments do end, but that shouldn't be a reason to like not let them be, you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is just accepting that even the most beautiful moments and the most painful ones, like at some point they will end.
It's all transient. It really is.
Yeah.
I had no conception really of how old you were beyond just knowing, like, when I first heard your music, which I guess was 2018.
Yeah.
But I was like, whoa, like,
I was 17 then. Yeah, I literally was 17.
I mean, not to stereotype what the art young people make, but it sounds very mature, you know?
Formed. I think, honestly, it's just because I spent so much of my life when I was growing up just practicing. Like, it just
practicing what?
Just practicing writing, practicing, like, just being a student of what I was seeing around me and like making a lot of really bad, silly songs. I just at a very early age decided to like dedicate my life to like the practice of writing and expression, not necessarily singing, but just like storytelling. And I would write every single day. So by the time I put out a song from the age of like 7 or 8, I was like writing every day. And so, yeah, I had a lot of experience in that way.
What inspired that? At such a young age, 7 or 8.
I don't know. I was just very curious. And my imagination was just so, like, insane that I needed a place to put all of that. And I just got a lot of joy from just like making up these little like fantasy worlds.
More insane than the average 7 or 8 year old's imagination.
Maybe not. I feel like I just had that urge to put it somewhere. I feel like a lot of people maybe would like make up little games with their friends or, you know, would stay quite contained. But I always had this urge to write things down and to document them.
Was anyone in your family writing or a writer?
No one. Everyone in my family is like, engineers and lawyers and accountants. Like, no one is really remotely creative. My dad really likes jazz music and listens to a lot of music, but no one is like remotely creative in any way.
Wow. If no one in your family maybe inspired you to do that, were you seeing art or hearing art?
I grew up with the internet and with YouTube, and my uncle gave me a collection of records, and that was like an interesting way into the world of records and world building. And he had a really interesting taste because he's French, and so there was a lot of like French music, French funk, but also like L Cool J and Tupac and like Sade.
Tupac,
yeah,
amazing.
And like, it was such an eclectic mix of things, and I think that started it for me because I was like maybe like 9 or 10. And then growing up with the internet on YouTube, I could just go down these little rabbit holes and like see Radiohead perform at Glastonbury, like see people like Odd Future kind of like blossoming online and being like weird and black and like crazy, you know. And I was watching that Rap Caviar thing that Tyler the Creator did like yesterday night.
Beautiful, right?
And it was so beautiful. And I feel like I'm part of that generation because I remember seeing that, seeing the colorful clothing and like just that sense of energy and just these people being disruptors and making like weird stuff. And I was like, I can do that.
I don't know if they know how important that was for so many people. By that point, I was in college at that point. Yeah. And I remember feeling like, oh shit, like these are my people. Finally, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. And that's always what has kind of inspired me. And I think growing up, I always did have a sense that the music that I liked was an interesting kind of pod of music, everything from ambient music to like My Bloody Valentine. And then I also really loved like Diggable Planets, but I also loved like jazz music and like Ethiopian folk music. Like, I just had this world of things, and I was like, okay, maybe I can distill this, maybe I can create a kind of little collage almost of all the things that I like, because I didn't feel like anyone else had that specific taste.
I'm trying to imagine what listening to Tupac in England, and you're like 9 or 10 years old, and it's like 2009, 2010, and you're hearing Pac. Like, what was, you know, I think of Pac, I grew up out here, and I was like 6 when he was killed. So like, that's my memory is like, it was a bunch of chaos, and then he like was killed, and it was like, you know, it was like almost scary. I just trying to imagine what that vibe was like for you.
I think for me it was, it did feel like a world that was very alien to the one that I was living in, but I loved the fact that even though I hadn't lived any of the experiences that he was talking about, I could picture it. Like, it was so vivid, the storytelling. And I think I've kind of carried that forward, that sense of like the spoken word and feeling like someone is telling you their truth, and that sense of rhythm, and also just how that can kind of really bring communities together and move people. And yeah, I think I was just moved by the way that he painted these really vivid scenes of like a place that was so far away from where I was as a kid.
Yeah. There is a lot of that in your songwriting. Like, I know you're going to play Eugene for us. That's a song in particular that I when I hear, I'm like, oh man, that's like, that's really laying it out there. Like,
definitely. Definitely. That song is like, I feel like it's the first time that I was really kind of like stripping myself bare in that way. But I think that the way that the song kind of traveled in the world and the kind of queer experience that it captured, I think it's kind of like what you were saying before, where I felt like it was an experience that only I had gone through, and then when I put it out into the world, people were just like holding up mirrors to themselves and being like, wow, this is what I lived, whether it was 20 years ago or this is what I'm in now. So I think that fear kind of melted away once I just started getting a reaction from people. But yeah, it's scary. It's always scary. It always feels very, I don't know, just exposing. But I'm kind of used to it now because I'm doing it all the time. I'm used to just being out here.
When I knew we were going to do this, I was like, man, I should think about like, why, like, what is it that attracted me to your music? I think there's a lot of things, but one of the main things was I realized was the writing. You know, people who are like songwriters, it can be obtuse, and that can be cool. But it's like and there's some mystery to, I think, what you're writing. But there's also like some of it's really evocative, you know, like just even like on your first song, like your Coca-Cola eyes. Like, you know, I think I've thought about that phrase meaning three different things since the first time I've heard it. You know, the first time I heard it, I interpreted that one way. It was very vivid. It made me think of like a Coca-Cola bottle and like being like, this person's like wide-eyed. And then I was like, oh, it's like a person on cocaine.
Yeah.
But it's such an evocative line. And even your new song, Impurities, there's some evocative stuff in there too. And the way you reference people. Like,
I love it. I can't stop myself.
I love when you reference people, you know? Gerard Ray, Claire Danes, Juliette Binoche. Yeah. Like, it's like, oh, wow.
I don't know why I have the instinct to do that. I think when it comes to my taste in writing, it's something that I really can't explain. Like, I guess it is just a mixture of my favorite writers and my favorite influences. I think a lot of it is just like a love of film.
When did you start loving film? When did that happen?
I think, honestly, it was a little bit later in my life. I mean, my short life. So probably when I was like in my late teens, I really started like throwing myself into film, especially like international film. Like, I never really explored like Brazilian film and Iranian film, and just actually really spreading out into different cultures and the way that they approach storytelling. And I think that really bled into the work, because there was this sense of wanting to paint these scenes as they were unfolding in front of my eyes and picking out these specific details. And, you know, the people who are listening to my music aren't like living my life, and maybe they weren't there, but there is something about like detailing like the eyelash on somebody's cheek, or like what exact song was playing on the CD when this happened, and the exact tone of brown of the floor. Like, I really love that sense of detail, and I think that happens so naturally.
The details, little details, really create like a point for like for me as a listener to really all of a sudden be transported, you know? Like,
yeah,
it does like the hard work of getting me in, and then like all the other things that are maybe a little more open for interpretation or whatever can kind of like, now I'm like in a frame of mind where I can really interpret those things in an interesting way, you know? But when you say like Claire Danes, and it's like you're automatically like, I know, I just, it's like a shortcut. It's like, I know what you're saying. Like,
yeah.
I shorthand for like this feeling, you know?
I think it's interesting to have also that balance, right, between those really clear anchors that are so specific and can't really be interpreted in any other way, and then parts of it that feel more fluid and that are just open. And it's like, yeah, you know, when you embrace my impurities and I feel clean again, like there's maybe a more obvious way to interpret that, but then it can like blossom into a million different ways of thinking. And I think I like having that balance, because I think being specific as well makes it feel like it's something that, you know, I really lived, and it is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that idea of like the personal being general too. Mm. We all feel like our experiences are so personal to us, but, you know, human experience is in some degree limited. So like much of what we go through, a lot of other people have gone through just in other variations, you know? So the idea of like the personal sort of being the more specific and the more personal you can get, actually the more kind of broad appeal you're opening up.
Exactly. And I feel like the songs that have moved me and like moved the world in the biggest sense are the ones that feel like they were written just for you. And everyone feels that way, you know, which is kind of impossible, but that's how I feel.
I was thinking about like Coachella's coming up. I remember seeing Radiohead there back
in. Oh, that's so funny. So that was literally going to be like Radiohead.
Were you thinking of Radiohead?
Yeah, I was thinking Radiohead. I mean, I just love Radiohead, so I'm always thinking about Radiohead, but yeah.
When did you get onto Radiohead?
Probably when I was about 17, and I just fell completely in love. I feel like it really informed those first few songs that I was doing, those first few EPs. Because I was listening to songs like House of Cards and Weird Fishes and Videotape, and just like the warmth and the texture, I was like, how did they make instruments sound like that? There is this sense of minimalism, but everything is so intentional.
Yeah.
And then I kind of like blossomed into like Kid A and listening to Amnesiac and thinking about the more
so good
electronic elements. Honestly, my favorite band of all time. And I've never seen them live.
Really?
Never. I really, really need to. I saw The Smile in Copenhagen, but I haven't seen
it. I wanted to see them.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was so good. Like Johnny Greenwood, like doing his like guitar with a bow thing, and the bow's just exploding, and he looks like the same age as he always has.
Yeah, he's never changed.
He's just a timeless wizard. I love him.
We have to pause for a short break, but before we go, let's hear Arlo Parks play Eugene from her debut album, Collapsed in Sunbeams.
I had a dream, we kissed, and it is all amethyst. The under part of your eyes was violet. You hung a cigarette between your purple lips.
Every week at Broken Record, we meet with legends of the industry to uncover the meaning behind the music, the strategy and history that separate the good from the truly great. That's what Mark Chaikin does, but for the U.S. stock market. Mark is a creative legend in his own right. He worked on Wall Street for 50 years, invented three new indices for the NASDAQ, and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent mania in AI stocks. Now Mark says we're seeing a similar shakeup in the financial markets. He's calling this a new dawn for the U.S. stock market and predicts dozens of specific stocks will soar in the next 90 days. You can watch Mark's presentation for free at marketmessage2024.com right now. Again, the link to watch is marketmessage2024.com. That's marketmessage2024.com.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
We're back with more of my conversation with Arlo Parks.
What was the first music that felt like your own music? That like you kind of discovered and felt like this is...
That's interesting. I think the first people that I really clung onto were actually like singer-songwriter, like listening to like Carrie and Lowell by Sufjan Stevens, listening to Either Or by Elliot Smith, listening to Blue by Joni, like just these really kind of like emotional, especially when you're like 15 and you're like going through it all for the first time.
Big emotions.
Exactly. Big emotions. Like everything felt on like such a massive scale, even if in the grand scheme of things, it's like a tiny minor inconvenience. And I feel like I really aligned with that. And I think that's something I've always kind of taken with me, that sense of being really like emotional and like, you know, open heart surgery, like those lyrics always come from this really deep place, and it's everything is kind of overflowing and brimming. And I think I've always taken that element into my music and then maybe moved away from it sonically, but always having that thread through like how I write.
Meaning like you feel like the songs as you write them end up sounding very different from what the record sounds like.
Yeah, no, I mean more that when listening to people like Elliot Smith or Joni, I try and kind of carry that essence in terms of how they write, but the actual kind of sonic world always like moves in a million different directions.
Got you. That's really interesting. Also interesting that those are two LA transplants.
Yeah, that is true actually.
Which I guess you've just recently moved to LA, right?
Yeah, no, I have. And there is something about like reading like Joan Didion when you're in California, like how, you know, it just everything aligns.
I'm from California, but still it's like reading Joan Didion in California or listening to a Joni Mitchell song, listening
in
to
like Laurel
Mitchell
Canyon or something.
In Laurel,
yeah.
As I'm driving, you know, I have to. Anytime I drive like up Laurel Canyon, I'm like, I got to think about Joni or think about, you know, the Mamas and the Papas or something. It's like,
yes.
It's that effect, even though I've lived here my whole life, it's never gone away.
Yeah.
Like, this is a magical place still, you know?
I agree.
Was a lot of your writing for your new record done here or was it?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how I really got to start knowing LA. I was coming back and forth for sessions. So in London, I was working with Paul Epworth, who's like one of my oldest collaborators. But in LA, I kind of started building this little community out of people who I really loved and trusted for the second record. And I started just having so much fun with my music. Like, I just felt infused with this new energy when I was here and just driving around and like going to the beach, going to Big Bear, making weird little bands with my friends for the day and just like really enjoying the process of making my second record. I suddenly felt like LA was an adventure that I needed to have. And I kind of made the leap quite randomly. And I feel so happy here. I feel so at home.
Did you like set out to move here or was it, did it just sort of
happen?
It kind
of happened like gradually, yeah. I just realized I was like, I'm here all the time, but I still tell everyone that I absolutely don't live here. So maybe I should just move, yeah.
How did you find your community here? I feel like that's something that people oftentimes say that they struggle with.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I have an easy route in terms of music and just being a fan of music before anything. And for example, like with Ramil from Brockhampton, I just loved his production and I loved all the references that I had kind of seen him pull from. And I knew he loved the Beatles and I knew he loved like the Neptunes and pop music, but also like folksy music. Like he just had this really intense love of music and I could tell. And so I just said, like, do you want to just get in the studio? And the first day we met, we made Impurities. And I could kind of feel that we had this synergy. And it kind of just branched off from that. Like, the same with Buddy. Like, his chords on all the Frank Ocean stuff are absolutely beautiful. And I was like, hey, like, I'm here now. Like, do you want to do something? And it happened like that, just so organically.
Wow. So Impurities was the first session with Ramil.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you walk me through the creation?
It's funny because with Ramil, we always hang out and then like make music in the background almost. So we were just chatting for like 5 hours, driving around, getting coffee, like listening to J. Paul. And then he kind of pulled up this little sample and I was like, oh, I like that. And I sang over it and everything just kind of came out. And then we just went back to hanging out. Like it was just this like our little pool of magic. And I think I always know when I can really trust somebody. Like the first session, if something that profound comes out, it means that we do have a genuine bond, because it does take a lot of vulnerability and trust to kind of allow someone to witness you in that like very soft and inward space. So I knew immediately that, yeah, we were going to make music together for a long time.
When you heard that sample and you started singing over it, were you singing the words as they turned out to be on the record, or were you just...
So I sang, it always happens where I hear the chord or the sample or whatever, and then a melody will come to me and I'll kind of voice note what I hear, put it into sections, like structure it out a bit in my mind. And then I have my notebook, which is just like a collection of phrases and textures and references and just things that I want to say. And then my heart just gets drawn to whatever's on that page. I'm like, okay, like I just had written down something like Impurities, Clean, like Escalade, Laugh Like Juliet, but not like all of these little notes. And then they just kind of, the fragments form this whole.
That's beautiful. So just so I understand, so you'll kind of structure out just like a melody. So not even necessarily words, could be just scatting or whatever, like non-vocalese or whatever, you know, like. But you come up with what you feel like the verse, if there's a bridge, bridge, chorus. So it's almost like then you find what in your writing in your book connects what you're feeling in this song.
Exactly. And I think it didn't always happen that way around. But just with this record, I started finding this almost like, I know it felt cosmic the way that melodies were coming to me. And it always came first. So I kind of started like weaving the words into what I had melodically to kind of create a story.
Did you do as much driving home in London?
No, because I learned to drive here.
So has driving impacted?
So much.
Because you saying that you were driving around 5 hours talking and then it sort of came to you. Yeah.
Like when I think about it, a lot of this record came to life in cars, because there's a song on the record called Devotion, which is kind of inspired, well, the name was inspired by the Mary Oliver collection of poems, but the actual music was like Smashing Pumpkins, like YOLO Tango, Deftones, My Bloody Valentine. Like, I wanted to create something heavier, but then
you're going hard when you drive.
I was going in and like, but then we were also listening to 17 Days by Prince, and I just loved the like drama of it. And I was like, I want to create something that's like so dramatically romantic with the backdrop of like these heavy, like smashing guitars. And we were just driving around and it just all came together, and that's what we made.
Mm. 17 Days, that's the greatest. It's so hard to pick up, but 17 Days is consistently, I think, the greatest Prince song in my mind.
So special.
I just love the groove he gets locked into.
Have you heard the demo version that he has on piano?
No.
It's online and it's amazing. Like, he's just like ripping the piano.
I gotta hear that. Mm-hmm. I love that. It's interesting too, though. Like, it doesn't sound like this record's not necessarily like a dramatic departure. Like, it feels like distinctly its own thing. Mm-hmm. It feels separate from the first album, but it doesn't feel like, oh, like clearly this was the first album written in the UK, different thing. And like, this is like, oh, this is an LA, you know, it's a second album LA album. Like, there's a lot of continuity between the two. And it's like all the things that I feel like I love from the first carry over.
Yeah, I think I definitely wanted to have that blank slate approach, but then also still recognize the fact that there are things about me that I do want to keep as a thread in terms of the way that I speak and the way that I kind of choose to tell stories about love or loss. But I did instrumentally just want to have complete free rein and, you know, be able to really put more of my references into the music. Like, I feel like people don't really know how much I love, like, IDM music, how much I love Aphex Twin and Boards of Canada and ambient music, or, you know, putting more moments of like ESG and like Zambian funk and the music that I really connect to. I think the first record had more of a sense of quite minimal warmth, and this one is more of a journey kind of through everything that moves me and that I love.
We need to take another quick break, but before that, let's hear Arlo Parks perform an acoustic version of her new song, Blades.
I'm exhausted, watching light Claire Danes through the water, kitchen light like blades through your body. The party's ablaze. We grew apart when you were fighting with your sister. Don't think I realize how horribly I missed you now. Regret is flowering inside me. Hope you know that I just don't know what to do. Something strangely romantic in our friendship, we were traumatic. I wept in your arms, talking for hours on the gravel, walking to boxes, linking pinkies, wearing matching pearls. And now I'm struggling, I'm choking without the words. Hope you know that I just don't know what to do.
Every week at Broken Record, we meet with legends of the industry to uncover the meaning behind the music, the strategy and history that separate the good from the truly great. That's what Mark Chaikin does, but for the U.S. stock market. Mark is a creative legend in his own right. He worked on Wall Street for 50 years, invented 3 new indices for the NASDAQ, and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent mania in AI stocks. Now Mark says we're seeing a similar shakeup in the financial markets. He's calling this a new dawn for the U.S. stock market and predicts dozens of specific stocks will soar in the next 90 days. He put everything you need to know in a new presentation specifically designed for people off Wall Street. You can watch Mark's presentation for free at newstocktrend.com right now. Again, the link to watch is newstocktrend.com. That's newstocktrend.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
We're back with the rest of my conversation with Arlo Parks, who tells us about the inspiration behind her new song, Blades, that she just performed live before the break. Tell me about making Blades.
So I made that song with Paul Epworth at Church Studios in Crouch End in London. And I feel like when I make music with Paul, there is just this real playfulness. Like, I feel like we're just two kids running around banging on things and we just come up with beautiful music and neither of us really know how, because we were just in a fugue state all day. And this one came during what I call the magic week, which is where we got 3 songs in like 4 or 5 days for the record. And I just wanted to create something that felt euphoric, like this sense of freedom and this sense of like bittersweetness and having that balance between light and shade that I feel kind of colors the record. And we were listening to a lot of ESG and like weird deep cuts that I found like on NDS radio. And he just started playing drums. And I was like, what's that? And he was like, oh, I got this new sampler. And he just started playing that sample. And then I started singing. And then the rest is a blur. Who knows? Who knows what happened? But it was magic.
What about like that almost spoken word bridge?
Honestly, I feel like I include those moments because there's so much more than I want to say that doesn't fit into the melody. There's just too much to say. So I'm just like, okay, I'll parcel off this little chunk where I can just continue the story. And I wanted it to almost sound like a stream of consciousness, like an inner monologue where you see someone across the room and you're kind of like, oh, I can see them laughing and they're covering their hand with their teeth. Oh, I remember how much she said she hated her teeth. Oh, is she wearing the same perfume? Like that kind of inner rambling and then opening up into this like sentiment coming back to again and again that you can't live without this person.
Would you mind reciting that little part?
Yeah. So I make my way over as the white lightning zigzags, and you're with Ahmed, plum red slacks and tequila Fraser, and you laugh the same, hand on mouth, because you hate your teeth, but I love your teeth and I'm scared to speak as I catch a whiff of your rose diptyque.
That's so cool. How much of the specifics in that, like the name, particularly like Does that come from real life, or like, are you writing about real people?
I'm writing about real people, but I often don't use real names because I'm scared. I was talking about this with my friend Romy from the XX. We were talking about it, and I was thinking, I was like, well, when that person comes to my show, like, I don't want them to know how much they hurt me. Like, I don't want them to be able to recognize themselves in the music. But I feel like with this record, I just kind of let go of that fear, because you do have to be real. And I feel like when you bend reality too much, it doesn't feel like a release to talk about it. So you just kind of have to be unfiltered as much as possible.
What is that, the reality of that, though? So for your art, you feel like you have to, for the sake of creating something real, you feel like you really have to throw your whole self into it, including the people around you, like your real life experiences. And does the reality of that ever like sort of settle in, where you're like, damn, like, oh, I'm gonna feel a little open now, you know?
Definitely. Definitely. I think when I write the song, I'm always like, oh, that exactly captured how I felt. And then I start to realize that it's not just for me and my three friends, and then it's gonna go on to the internet and everyone be able to know. But at the same time, when I think about like my favorite songs, I think about Say Yes by Elliott Smith or like Biscuit by Portishead or whatever it might be. And there is this sense of someone being open completely.
Yeah.
That's why it moves me. Like, that's why I feel like it just gets me, because that person has just been fearless with how open they've been.
Yeah. That's a really advanced place to be, where you can be that open, you know, that honest with yourself. Even just with yourself, forget even just, you know, the people around you.
It is hard, you know? And I think it's interesting, because when a lot of people tell their stories, I feel that there is that sense of kind of wanting to be the hero of a situation. I think it can be difficult to be like, actually, I was wrong on this. Actually, I was being jealous, or I was bitter, or I was being petty. You know, like being able to actually show the experience as three-dimensional. I feel like that does take a lot of honesty, but at the same time, it feels so much more human when you hear that kind of song.
Yeah. It's also like, I think back to being 22 and just like the ripples through your sort of social life that can be caused by like saying one cross thing, or, you know, one thing the wrong way, or, you know, and it's just like, oh man, you know, that's just a scary thing.
Yeah, it is scary. But at the same time, I don't know. I feel like when I have that little kind of nudge of fear internally, I'm like, okay, I'm like breaching new ground here. It feels scary, but that means I'm doing something that is beyond what I did before.
How do you balance moving to a new place like LA, writing a record, touring, like just like the responsibilities that come with being a working artist? The press, stuff like today, you know, having to come do this.
I feel like I am someone who thrives in like how urgent this lifestyle is. Like, I feel like I find it really hard to slow down, and that's something I actually have to practice, because I'm working every day pretty much, and I feel like I have to kind of really work at resting, because I know that I'm always like moving and have quite like a frenetic energy. So I really want to do things that are like active rest, whether it's like cooking or going for walks or stepping outside of things. But I think because I love what I do so much, and it kind of just soaks into everything that I do, I find it hard to kind of step away and find balance. And I think there are some things about being an artist that I really love, and things that I feel find a little bit more challenging. I think I love being in the studio and being around people and collaborating and, you know, being a creative soul, because that's what I am. But I think sometimes having to explain the music, having to kind of break down my identity and why I made certain creative choices and who I am, I think that can be a little bit more tricky for me. And just to be perceived like that, like, I just want to be a little hermit.
Yeah. You only want to be able to like kind of like put it out.
Yeah, let the exactly. Cards and fall then run away. Do, yeah.
And then, like, you're nowhere to be found.
Exactly. That's what I want. That's my dream.
Maybe that can happen. I feel like, you know, there's been artists over time, some of my favorite artists, like, I mean, like a Prince, you know, like,
yeah.
It was just like,
I think it's interesting though, because I remember my friend Ocean was talking about this, where it was like,
Ocean or just Ocean?
No, Ocean Vuong. Okay. He's like a writer. But my friend Ocean, yeah. Prank Ocean. No. Ocean was talking to me about the idea of prayers, and I was asking if he enjoyed it. And he had a really interesting perspective on it, where he was like, okay, it can be draining and tiring, but I like the fact that I'm given the opportunity to kind of set up the context for what I did and what I meant, rather than have someone come in and do it for me if I'm silent and I don't explain it at all. And I was like, I do actually like the idea of being able to state what I wanted to do with my work, what I'm talking about, rather than having somebody come in and maybe just take things the wrong way or twist things or explain it in a way that I don't like. So I'd rather be there saying it, I guess.
That's a fair point. You're not allowing other people to sort of make determinations for you.
Yeah, exactly.
As frustrating as setting the records, yeah. Right? It's just having to do it or needing to do it. You're like an indie artist from the UK. Mm. Now you're in a, like, do you find that the pressures of the industry can be like a little stronger, or the currents can be a little stronger here than...
I don't know. I feel like I'm quite good at just creating a little island of people around me, and I don't really know what's going on outside of that. I think, you know, obviously there's always a sense of pressure, but I kind of like the fact that I'm in this kind of new space that I'm navigating. I don't really have that much awareness of, like, whether it's like certain cliques or like how people work or like what's the right thing to do or clout or whatever. I just don't really know what's going on. So I'm just in my own little way moving through the city. And I just feel like I've been lucky. Like, I've just found a lot of good people, I think, who, even if I do feel that sense of pressure, I can talk to and like feel accepted by, and we can just sit down and have a coffee. And if I do feel like I'm under pressure or I'm burning out, like, there are a lot of people that are here to listen. And I know not everyone has that. So
yeah,
I'm happy.
Do you find your parents kind of understand what you're doing?
Over time, because it's been like 5 years now, over time I've managed to kind of try and explain the framework of what it is that I'm doing. But it's so hard to understand it from the outside. Like, even the idea of a photo shoot or traveling or all of these things, like, it's really difficult to explain like what it is that I do all day. Like, I just like talk and sing and like fly around and like, you know, it's just like really hard to explain it unless you're doing it. And I think that's why it's good to have people who are both outside of the world completely, where you can just hang out with them and they just don't really know what's going on and you can just be. And then also having friends who are kind of embedded in that same world and you can understand each other.
That seems pretty healthy. So you can get the kind of the perspective, moral support from the people who know what you're going through day to day, but then also the people who are just like, who
this
gives
is like
a fuck?
Humbling. Yeah, yeah, you're like, just like, okay, well. Yeah.
That's great. How do your parents, like, do you, is there a line, are they allowed to talk to you about this? Like, you know, you're like, or do you kind of just like, it is what it is? And
I think it kind of just is what it is. I feel like they just have this really strong understanding of the fact that, like, yeah, I just kind of like write about what I need to get out and I show them the music and stuff and they're fans of it. But there is that like healthy boundary of they just kind of like let me say what I need to say.
Without really asking too many questions or being too involved.
Exactly, exactly.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for playing and for talking.
Yeah, playing and talking.
For playing and talking and dissecting your music.
Of course, thanks for having me.
Thanks to Arlo Parks for talking through the inspiration for her new album, My Soft Machine. You can hear all of our favorite Arlo Parks songs on a playlist at BrokenRecordPodcast.com. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at YouTube.com/BrokenRecordPodcast, where you can find all of our new episodes. Broken Record is produced with help from Leah Rose, Jason Gambrell, Ben Tolliday, Nisha Venkat, Jordan McMillan, and Eric Sandler. Our editor is Sophie Crane. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription service that offers bonus content and uninterrupted ad-free listening for only $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like the show, remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music is by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond.
Every week at Broken Record, we meet with legends of the industry to uncover the meaning behind the music, the strategy and history that separate the good from the truly great. That's what Mark Chaikin does, but for the U.S. stock market. Mark is a creative legend in his own right. He worked on Wall Street for 50 years, invented 3 new indices for the NASDAQ, and has predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent mania in AI stocks. Now Mark says we're seeing a similar shakeup in the financial markets. He's calling this a new dawn for the U.S. stock market and predicts dozens of specific stocks will soar in the next 90 days. You can watch Mark's presentation for free at marketmessage2024.com right now. Again, the link to watch is marketmessage2024.com. That's marketmessage2024.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.